This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
I'm Russ White for MSU Today, and it's a pleasure to welcome Kirk Cousins, record-setting Michigan State University quarterback, of course, to the program, and current Washington Redskins quarterback in the NFL Today. Kirk is out with his debut book called Game Changer. Inside, he gives readers an inside look at his life as experienced under the bright lights of college and professional football, and how he puts his faith and values into action both on and off the field. Kirk, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me on, Russ. Appreciate it.
Let's back up a little bit, Kirk, because while we've known and loved you around these parts for a long time, you really burst on the scene in 2011 when you spoke at the Big Ten media luncheon. And take us back to what message you were trying to give at that luncheon.
Yeah, the message at the luncheon was all around the topic of privilege and how, as a Big Ten athlete, I am privileged. And most often human nature tends to think that when you are privileged that you become entitled because you deserve to be treated a certain way because you're privileged. At least that's the train of thought that most people have. And I wanted to convey the message that not only should we not have entitlement, but when we're privileged, we need to operate with an even greater sense of responsibility and to represent our school, our families, and ourselves in the best way possible. So I challenged my teammates, I challenged the other athletes there at the luncheon that day, and challenged everyone in the room to really look at themselves, understand that they're privileged, and how are they going to respond with that privilege. And that really did lead to the book, led to the opportunity that was presented to me to write a book, and I wanted to basically use that principle along with several other principles to lay out the groundwork for that book. And very, very pleased to announce it is being released this week.
And Kirk, it's called Game Changer. Again, tell us what sort of motivated you to write the book and who's it for?
The book is really intentional towards young people, whether that's middle school, high school, college-age kids, trying to really have an impact on them as they try to find their way in life. But I wrote it in a way where it really can be read by people even younger than middle schoolers, and really it can also be read by adults. So I didn't want to hone in on any particular group too much, but I certainly had young people in mind when I wrote the book.
And Kirk, you took an interesting approach actually writing to your 15-year-old self. Sort of explain that, and how did that idea come about?
Well, I did not write it. The writing style was not writing it to my 15-year-old self, but in terms of when I sat down and started punching out chapters, I needed to get a frame of mind as to what am I saying and how am I saying it, and I really tried to think about, okay, what did the 15-year-old Kirk Cousins need to hear as he began his high school years and still had his college years ahead of him as well? What did he need to hear for what he was going to face over those next several years? And that was what I had in mind as I thought about the important chapters, to the important messages to convey, the content that I needed to bring about. So I thought about what the 15-year-old Kirk Cousins need to hear, and I think that the 15-year-old Kirk Cousins need to hear the same things that every 15-year-old needs to hear, and that's why I think this book is a valuable resource for young people, especially around the age of middle school, high school.
And Kirk, why do you think it's important for young people to have positive role models, and who were some of yours or continue to be?
Well, I think back to my years in middle school and high school, and I see how, as much as I may have thought I had it all figured out, I didn't. And I still had a lot to learn, and I had a long ways to go. And the fact that I was able to make any good decisions was based on the fact that I had people around me who were positive role models, who showed me an example of the way I needed to behave and gave me a great picture of what I wanted to become. So I think that this book can be that same kind of a resource to anybody out there who's willing to read it. They can see a picture of where they want to go and get a vision for what their life can become if they choose to follow the principles in this book.
Kirk Cousins, the full title of your book, Game Changer, is also Faith, Football, and Finding Your Way. Talk about how you merge your faith with football and how it's helped you make good decisions on and off the field.
Football is what I do. I'm an NFL quarterback, but being a Christian and operating with a faith in God is who I am. And so whatever I do, being a Christian is going to be a part of it. It's going to be the foundational part of it. So it's impossible for me to write a book. It's impossible for me to play quarterback in the NFL without my faith coming through what I do. So that is a foundational principle in the whole book, is my faith, and the Bible and the truths of the Bible are throughout the book. But I believe that the principles in the book, whether it's the importance of finding a role model, the importance of having the right friends, or privilege and responsibility, all those themes, I think, are timeless truths that regardless of the faith you hold, it's pretty much indisputable that those are proper principles to build your life upon.
And what does it mean, Kirk, for you when you say working for the Lord?
You know, I think it means that whatever I do, my identity is based on my faith, what Christ did for me. My identity is not based on my performance on the football field. And that really gives freedom. It gives freedom to know that I can fail, although I don't want to fail. I can fail, and it will happen, and my world isn't over. You know, my identity is not based on my performance on the football field. Certainly other people may think that, you know, my identity is based in football, or they may perceive me based on how my football performances are, but my own perception of myself is not based on how I am as an NFL quarterback. My perception of myself is based on who I am in Christ, and that's not changing. And so it gives me freedom, and it gives me peace, and that's what it means to work for the Lord, knowing that at the end of the day, I play this football game, I write this book to glorify and honor the Lord. I don't do it to glorify and honor people or to glorify and honor myself.
And Kirk, has success always come easy to you?
No, it hasn't. And I talk about that in the book. It's been a major challenge. That's part of playing athletics. That's part of growing up, is that we face struggles, we face trials, we face challenges. And that's part of learning what it means to grow up and learning what it means to face adversity and to respond to adversity and not just react. So I think it's been a very challenging process. And, you know, you have to read the book to hear more about that story for me. But it was a challenge. And my time at Michigan State was challenging. And while on the outside it may look like we had a lot of success, there were many challenging days.
Kirk Cousins is my guest on MSU Today. And, Kirk, what is your most memorable game from your time at MSU, and how has it affected and changed the way, you know, the team player you've become?
Well, you know, I think I have a lot of great memories at Michigan State, and it's hard to single out any one particular. But there's no doubt that I entered Michigan State as an 18-year-old boy and left as a 23-year-old man, and my experiences there over 5 years were what matured me into the person that I wanted to become. And I owe a lot of that to Coach D'Antonio and his coaching staff and the program that they had built there. But I think that my greatest memories go back to, you know, beating Michigan four straight times, making it to the first ever Big Ten championship game, winning the Outback Bowl in my final game, winning the Big Ten championship in 2010. All of those are special accomplishments that I'll remember for the rest of my life.
And, Kirk, you're getting ready to go back to training camp in the NFL, and you'll be taking the snaps, I guess, as the starting quarterback while RG3 heals. But what's ahead this season for you?
Well, there's high expectations in Washington, D.C. for the Redskins because of the fact that last year we made the playoffs with rookie quarterbacks and a rookie running back and a lot of new players. So the fact that all these guys are back and we have a lot of stability, there's high expectations for us to go out and have a great year and hopefully make the playoffs again. So we'll see what happens, but we certainly are excited and think we have a lot of potential to have a great year.
Well, Kirk, a last couple of questions. Let's get back to Game Changer, your brand new book. You do offer a lot of advice about faith, football, and life in general. What would you say is maybe the most important piece of advice you like to give?
Well, I think, you know, the underlying theme of the book is the two verses in the Bible that I built my life upon, which are Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And it says to trust in the Lord with all your heart, not lean on your own understanding and all your ways, to acknowledge him, and he will direct your steps. And I believe that what that message is that I want to give to young people is that you're going to face ups and downs in life, you're going to have challenges, and understand that in those challenges, there is a point and there is a purpose to them, and you are going to learn things that are going to benefit you down the road, and you need to just trust and hold on and keep fighting and understand that there are good things coming as long as you stay obedient to God and to his word and to his principles.
And you're living your dream, Kirk, pursuing the NFL. What's your advice for, you know, your closing advice for people sort of chasing their own dreams?
As much as we may have dreams for ourselves, I think God has a plan and a dream for all of us too, and he wants to see those dreams accomplished, and I think that they will be accomplished as long as we stay connected to him and surrendered to him. And so I think that it's hard for God to steer a parked car. You know, we have to be moving, we have to be working, we have to be developing ourselves, but as long as we're putting the work in and putting the time in, I think God opens doors and closes other doors to lead us to where he wants us.
And is there a final message or two you hope people take away, Kirk, when they read Game Changer?
Well, I want people, especially young people, to walk away being motivated to live a life and to start a habit of decision-making that not only blesses them, but blesses those around them. And to walk away from having read that book saying, I am now going to start making decisions and building my life upon things that aren't going to fade and that are going to hold on and provide for me in the good times and the bad. And I think it's important that people build their lives around the same truths that I built my life upon. And if they can learn anything from my story, I hope that that book can be a major, major tool for them to do that.
Kirk Cousins, thank you so much for joining us. A best of luck with Game Changer, Faith Football, and Finding Your Way. The easiest place, I think, for people to find it, simply go to kirkcousins.org, and all the appropriate links will be there. And Kirk, thanks again for joining us, and best of luck with the Redskins this year.
Okay, thank you, Russ.
Kirk Cousins, our guest on MSU Today. Please stay in touch with us at SpartanPodcast.com, and I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, it's all about who you know. And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you're instantly connected to 500,000 Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, I'm Jen Iyer. I'm Statewide Community Engagement Director for MLive Media Group.
And I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
MLive Media Group is the company that owns MLive.com and 8 newspapers across the state of Michigan, including the Grand Rapids Press and the Flint Journal and several others. Being Statewide Community Engagement Director means I oversee all the ways on our editorial side that we engage with our audience. So that includes comments. It means I'm looking at how we do social media. And it means I'm looking at how we engage with our audience on a face-to-face basis in our news hubs across the state. Every day is different, which is one of the reasons I love this job. But on a daily basis, what I'm doing is looking at our site, looking at our content, making sure that we are engaging with our readers in the comments, making sure that we're putting our content in front of the people who care about it on social media and on other channels, and making sure that we're making the most of opportunities in our local communities to find ways to meet with people face-to-face and to forge deeper connections with our readers.
MLive Media Group has two goals, says Iyer: to increase audience and engagement.
And we recognize, and first of all, I'm going to say that, you know, engagement is sort of a wonky term, but what we mean by engagement is capturing the attention of readers, holding their attention, and somehow motivating them to participate with us in some way. So, you know, that could be voting in a poll, that could be leaving a comment, that could be sharing an article. That's all engagement. We recognize that engagement is important for a couple of reasons. It forges deeper bonds with our readers. It creates more loyalty among readers. And that's really important because we don't come to their doorsteps every day like we did in the old world. And so we can't count on readers seeing what we produce every day. We can't count on them even coming to our website every day, because that's just not how people consume the news anymore. So we recognize that we have to, you know, find ways to you know, capture the attention of our readers and make them understand, you know, that we're producing this great content every day, and it's there. And the more that we are engaging with them, the more they're going to think of coming back to MLive every day, and being regular readers of our content.
While many media outlets shy away from engaging with readers, Iyer says MLive encourages reporters to engage with their readers, including through the comment section on each story.
The biggest way that we do that is through reader comments. Now, it's not a one-way street. It's not just that we accept reader comments on MLive. Our reporters are heavily involved in the comment sections on their stories. And actually, our reporters are given the task of being the guardians of the conversations on their stories. And we do that because we recognize that the comment section is very, very critical. It's a critical part of our mission. You go to any community in which we serve, and you know, people will, as soon as I mention that I have anything to do with the comments, that's all people want to talk about. People are intensely interested in what their neighbors are saying about the news. And so that's not something we can ignore. And it's not just a matter of not ignoring it. We really have a high level of respect for our commenters. You know, we have the occasional bad egg in the group, but overall, we recognize that these are our readers, these are our neighbors in our communities, and we really respect what they have to say. So our reporters are in there, and they are answering questions. And sometimes they're the ones asking questions of their readers because they want to know what the readers want to know. And we recognize that not only is it helping to build a loyalty, a stronger bond with those readers, it's improving the product that we produce because we're getting constant feedback from those readers about how we're doing, what we're doing, and quite frankly, a lot of them, have information on stories that we don't have yet. So there's all kinds of really good things that we get from the comments in our stories.
Iyer says the business challenges for journalism concern her as the fast-paced media world we live in races ahead, but she thinks the journalism taking place today is some of the best ever, and that journalism is even more important as printed newspapers continue to struggle.
The challenges really seem to be on the business side, because the state of journalism itself, I think, has never been better. We've never had more opportunities to pick and choose what information sources we want to subscribe to for, next to nothing in most cases, financially, than we do now. And there are organizations that are producing amazing levels of journalism. Our organization, with M Live Media Group, we have a whole team dedicated to enterprise journalism. And that is a very important part of our mission. It's not just the quick hits that we do. We feel strongly in doing investigative journalism, and we're, supporting that through, the staff that we have dedicated to that. So in my mind, the state of journalism itself, the quality of journalism, is as good as it's ever been. It's just that it comes in different forms, and those forms aren't always recognized by people. They may see a quick hit story and not realize that there was a deeper story that followed it up later. And so when they see is the quick hit, they think, they hardly went into depth at all on that story. But there's so much information out there that sometimes it's overload, and it's really hard to keep up with everything. That's really one of the critical issues. And so, what we need to do, really on a reporter-by-reporter basis, is make sure every reporter in our company understands very well who their audience is and how they're going to reach them. Because every reporter, in this company anyway, is responsible to a certain degree on making sure that their stories reach their audience.
M Live's Iyer suggests that today's J-School students continue to focus on job one as they prepare to enter this fast-paced, ever-changing media world we're in. That is, the fundamentals of being a good reporter.
I think, first and foremost, the most important thing, it's as important as it's ever been, is for J-School students to understand the fundamentals of being a good reporter, because those are the things that you, once you're out in the field, it's a lot harder to learn because you're getting bombarded with all the practical, the day-to-day, use this tool, use that tool, try this technique. And if you don't already have the fundamentals of journalism down, the fundamentals of ethics, of the law, of how to work a beat, how to develop a beat, how to develop sources, all of those things, then you're going to be lost. And you're going to get swayed by the forces that are, that are out there that are potentially going to affect your integrity. So that's first and foremost. Then it would be great if journalism grads also had a good understanding of how to use the tools that we have now at our disposal through social media, through good old-fashioned email, and through other ways to reach their audience and to make sure that they understand when I publish a story on a school board meeting, that I understand who in this community is going to care about it and how I'm going to get that story in front of their eyeballs.
Iyer is an MSU J School alumna.
Oh, gosh. MSU was everything in terms of getting me to where I am. I actually started my college career at the University of Michigan. I did my freshman year there, and then I decided to go into journalism. And so because Michigan didn't have a journalism program, and I will say, because Michigan wasn't quite living up to my expectations in terms of a social scene for my college life, it was a couple of factors that led to my decision to go to Michigan State. So once there, I found that there was just this amazing journalism program led by instructors who just had such a deep knowledge of the fundamentals. I feel like I just got a great education there. And not only that, but through my work at the State News, made so many contacts with talented journalists. You know, my entire cohort from the State News at that time, and that was 95-96, are still gainfully employed in journalism and doing very, very well. So, I feel like I was there at a really good time for journalism, and it's really developed and shaped me into what I'm doing now.
Iyer says MLive Media Group is okay with anonymous comments on its site.
I think the one thing that I would address, because it always comes up when I talk to people about what I do, is the issue of anonymity and civility in conversation. We on MLive allow anonymous commenters. We haven't tried to institute a Facebook system of commenting like some of our competitors in other markets, TV markets and other newspaper markets across the state. And there's many reasons for that. But ultimately, we believe that people have very good reasons for wanting to be anonymous when they're commenting in the digital era. People have employment reasons. They have, concerns about, their employers or their clients, seeing what they have to say about local tax issues or local school board issues. And we respect that. So we instead take an approach that really focuses on the content of the comment rather than the identity of the commenter. And we look very closely at all of our conversations, and we moderate those conversations, taking down comments that contain personal attacks and name-calling and, unverified information that could be slanderous towards other people. And what we are left with, what results from all of that is a very vibrant community conversation, and you can feel that it's different when you visit a story on Grand Rapids, on the Grand Rapids portion of our site versus Flint versus Saginaw. You really get a sense of the community that you're visiting, essentially, through our site, through the tone of the comments on those stories. So we're focused on trying to be as inclusive as possible, and trying to really be the place for civil community conversation within each community that we serve.
That's Jen Iyer, MLive Media Group Statewide Community Engagement Director, and I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
Visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, our next guest is Michael Bass. Michael is a manager of Friedland Industries based in Lansing, Michigan.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
You folks are working in the recycling game.
Yes.
In all sorts of ways.
Yeah, we process for recycling all ferrous as well as non-ferrous metals. all grades of paper, various plastics, not all but some, and also more recently computer and electronic equipment. And another side department of what we do now is confidential shredding. So we do quite a bit of confidential shredding for documents as well as hard drives and media and things like that.
What is ShredFest?
Well, ShredFest is a really
interesting... Sounds
like fun. Oh, yeah. It turned out to be a great event. It originated as Document Destruction Day, which is sort of a celebration for... It's the first Saturday after Tax Day. So it's a celebration for people to, you know, shred all their tax documents or anything that they needed to have shredded confidentially.
Makes people feel a little better, right?
Right, exactly. Well, and it just so happens that it was around Earth Day as well. And so we decided to extend that into a whole week where we start the week off with Document Destruction Day. And then the following week, that Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we gave tours, you know, to the public. And then the following Thursday ended with ShredFest, which turned out to be a great event. It's sort of an in case you missed it opportunity for Document Destruction Day. But it's kind of nice how they both have turned into a big event.
So let's say I'm a local business, and say I'm a law mm-hmm. firm or something of that nature.
Sure.
I mean, how do I physically, do I just box up everything I want shredded and bring it to
yes.
Friedland?
Yeah, you can box it up or put it in bags. As long as you can get it here, we can find a way to shred it. It's actually pretty impressive, the shredders that we have, the paper shredders that we have, that we can shred at a very high rate. Whether it's an individual with, you know, less than 100 pounds, say they have 30 pounds and they just have one bag of documents from their house.
That would be
that's
a household.
Fine. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be household. But it's the same for companies or municipalities that we saw plenty of them, you know, that came on that day. They had at least, you know, 25 to 50 banker boxes, you know, of documents, and we were able to handle it for them pretty quickly. But we do it year round, but, you know, this is the two times of the year, I guess, that we do it for free for the public. So.
Well, a couple things that have occurred to me. I'm one of these small business owners that has a shredder, and
sure.
I could either bring the documents to you, or I could bring what I've shredded to you as well.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine.
In a bag as well, I suppose.
Absolutely.
But what about paper clips? And sometimes people spend a lot of time trying to take paper clips and staples out of the paper. Do you have to do that?
No, paper clips, things like, you know, staples, paper clips, even the really thin spiral bindings that might be metal or plastic that you would find on a notebook, the really thin ones. That's fine. That's completely okay. What our paper shredders really can't handle are those thick three-ring binders. It's those types of things that would really, you know, eat up the cutters on the shredder. So you have to make sure to take documents out of that. But other than that, it's fine.
So virtually anything other than those big three-ring binders.
Pretty much, yes.
Now, I wonder if you want to recycle a three-ring binder. I mean, can you guys do that too?
Oh, yeah, yes, we can take those for you, absolutely, mm-hmm. because it's ferrous content. It's if you were to take a magnet to it. By ferrous, I mean metals that will stick to a magnet, mm-hmm. so and non-ferrous metals that don't stick to a magnet. You know, if you think of the periodic table of elements, you know, iron on the periodic table of elements is Fe. Well, that Fe stands for ferrous, as mm-hmm. I think you guys already know. But, you know, so that three-ring binder, you'll notice if you put a magnet up to it, it will stick. So that's definitely something we can take for recycling for sure.
My guest is Michael Bass, who's a manager of Friedland Industries based in Lansing, Michigan. Okay, Michael, we've talked about paper. What about when people are bringing in other products that you take, plastics, for example? Do people have to wash those plastics out? Do caps have to come off of milk jugs, for example? What are some of the other things people should know, not only for their households but for their businesses?
The cap question is a very good question. Plastics are a really unforgiving commodity. You know how you have the triangle on the bottom of a bottle and it has a number in it? Well, or it might be a 1 or a 2 or a 3. Well, you know, each one of those numbers represent a different chemical compound. So you can't have them mixed together, because when we ultimately send that to a plastic mill, it'll really mess up their process when they're trying to melt it down and turn it into new plastic if it's commingled together. So it really has to be separated. So... You know, they do have to be washed for sure. If you have any oils or food waste in there, you know, those need to be rinsed out for sure. However, mills are a little bit more lenient now when it comes to water bottles, leaving the cap on.
Okay.
They're able to handle that, as well as, you know, milk jugs, you know, preferably off, but, you know, we can take them with them on.
Well, this what you're doing is giving us here an education on recycling. And speaking of education, though, you guys do a lot of outreach. You've had a long-standing relationship with Michigan State University.
Yep.
You do tours, Lansing Community College. Tell us about some of that.
Yeah, we give tours every fall and spring for LCC, for example, their environmental sciences classes. MSU as well. We've kind of gone off and on and giving tours, and you know, as well as tours to the public, really, whenever they would like. But it's always interesting because a lot of these classes, it's a required class for LCC, and I imagine for MSU as well. So you have students in there who don't, you know, they're not going into environmental sciences. That's not what they do. But maybe they're going into business, or maybe they're going into engineering or something along, or packaging, you know, as we discussed earlier. So it's what I try to do with those tours is explain to them not just, well, first and foremost, the economics side of recycling, how it has to be done in a cost-effective manner in order for it to work. And the very reason that these items and these commodities are recyclable is because they have value in the first place. So the other side of that is that it doesn't matter whether they're going into environmental sciences. Ultimately, after they graduate, they'll find that what they do will have an impact on our industry, and what we do will have an impact on them. And that's, you know, by the end of the tour, usually they're pretty excited about it and they have a whole new appreciation for it. I guess the other side of that is that, you know, for us, it's all about perception. You know, for example, you know, the average person walking down Center Street, if they were to look into our facility, they might say, into our East Yard, they might say, oh, Friedland, that's a junkyard. But, you know, to us, junk is a derogatory term. You know,
it's a resource.
Right. It's because it's not what we deal
with.
You know, it's not waste. It's not junk. They're all commodities, and they all have specific values. You know, believe it or not, there's a method behind the madness to what we do. And each of those, like you said, each of the commodities, they have different values. So, the scrap industry is kind of interesting in that it has had there does seem to be a negative connotation or a negative vibe around it, and that whether it's an episode of The Sopranos, you know, or NCIS, the shakedown always happens at a scrapyard, you know. Or if you think about the brave little toaster with the angry magnet crushing the helpless vehicles, right? Well, you know, it just so happens that the scrap industry is a very integral part of the recycling process, and it's the reality of recycling and the economics of recycling that we try to explain to these students when they come in.
I think there's a mindset, because more and more people we're talking to, it's really no different looking at a pile of scrap metal like you might look at a bin full of corn or soybeans.
Exactly. That's a great way of putting
perception.
It. Yeah. Yes, as a commodity, correct. That's
and
a great way of putting it.
And for people to perceive the value, you look at a bin of corn, a lot of people think, well, that's feed or the But
right.
It's a commodity. It has value. It's like
so much
a pile
cents per
gold.
Pound. Right, exactly. Yeah, to people in the ag industry, for sure.
You have some interesting stats in your op-ed piece about how much less energy it takes to create products from recycled material versus virgin materials.
Yes.
Pretty amazing statistics.
Oh, sure. Ferrous alone, you know, if you even take the mic stands that we're using right now, you know, these are most likely made from scrap material before. That was considered sheet iron or shredder scrap. You know, just with ferrous alone, you're using 56% less energy than you are mining virgin iron ore out of the ground. Some of the non-ferrous materials like copper and aluminum, some of those are almost entirely made from scrap as opposed to mining out of the ground. And if you get into the electronics end, you know, really what mills are interested in are the gold plating. So there's quite a bit of, even for gold, you know, if someone that you know got married recently, there's odds are if it's a gold ring that it was part of a circuit board before as opposed to something that was in the ground. So it's kind of interesting.
It's fascinating. But when you think about all the energy that goes into mining,
for example, yes.
And then the transportation of that commodity and all of those sorts of things, just to produce the virgin material.
Exactly.
Yeah. And reducing that energy footprint, reducing the carbon footprint in the process.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Total sustainability.
And the most interesting part to me about it is that that's the way it's been for a long time. You know, the word recycling has been around since, you know, maybe the 1980s or so, but, you know, it just used to be called scrap processing before, and it was just the way it was, you know.
And Freeland's been doing this
for a long time.
Recycling before recycling became a buzzword, essentially.
Right. Probably a good example would be if you take items, if you're, you know, switching gears to paper, if you take items such as napkins, toilet paper, paper towel, okay, those are examples of paper that has been blended and reblended at a paper mill. and reprocessed and recycled so many times that it's really on its last length of life. There is a directional relationship when it comes to paper. You know, you can't use Kleenex or a tissue paper and then expect to throw it in a recycling bin and have it be turned into new paper.
Right.
There comes a point when the fibers just aren't strong enough anymore. But you know, really, that type of material has been recycled for a long time. But my dad always laughs, you know, when he was walking down the supermarket aisles in the 1980s, all of a sudden you see, well, our paper towel is green. Our toilet paper is made from recycled paper. You know, it's always been that way, but it was never fashionable to have it that way before because people didn't want to know they were using used paper. But now that it's fashionable, they do want to know. So
that's really
it's kind of interesting, you know, but it's been that way for a while.
Well, Michael Bass, manager of Friedland Industries, it's been a pleasure talking to you. You know, the things you do in the community of Lansing, your commitment to sustainability goes way
Absolutely.
Back. It's quite a family success story. And
thank you.
Wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you very much.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. Join the MSUAA family, and you're instantly connected to our network of over 500,000 Spartans in every corner of the world. Whether it's community, connections, career growth, or class, that's what the MSU Alumni Association is all about. Join the world's largest Spartan Nation community at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
There's a special annual event coming up on the MSU campus that holds a special place in my heart. It's Ag Expo, which is Michigan's largest farm show, coming up on July 16 through 18. And here to tell us more about it is a former colleague of mine who has taken the show to even higher levels than I could have dreamed of. She is Megan Honke, as she is an events coordinator for the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources. Megan, always good to see you.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
A little bit of history of Ag Expo for those who may not be familiar with it.
Sure. It started many years ago by the Department of Agricultural Engineering just as a simple field day, and it's grown into what it is today 34 years later.
Yeah, 34 years of Ag Expo. That's pretty amazing. Yeah. That might be the oldest farm show in Michigan.
It is.
In addition to the largest.
Correct.
Megan, before we get into some of the cool educational and fun things at Ag Expo, and I know it's an event for the whole family, there's something new this year where the leadership of the college is going to be available to talk to people about agriculture and natural resources.
Yeah, about 9:30 on the first morning of the show, Tuesday morning, the leadership, Dean Poston, Director Kuhn, Director Bueller with Ag Bio Research are going to be there along with Kelly Millenbaugh, the new Associate Dean. Mm. And they're going to be there to talk a little bit about the vision of where the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources is headed. Michigan's had a tough time in the last few years with agriculture, with the frost, with the drought last year. And so they're really there to talk about where is MSU's College of Agriculture and Natural Resources headed, and then listen to people, gather information, and take that back to really shape where the college is headed and going.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I know there have been some concerns out there in the agricultural sector about Michigan State and whether the long-term commitment to agriculture will be as strong as it has been historically. So this is a really good idea to reassure folks, isn't it?
It is, and I haven't met three more passionate men, and just getting started working with Kelly, it has been amazing. They are energetic and aggressive and are completely committed to agriculture and natural resources across Michigan.
So they'll be taking questions from the general public about anything that folks want to ask them.
Absolutely, and this is just one of the first ones that they're going to be offering. There will be several more around the state, mm-hmm. so there will be more information coming out on those other locations all the way across the UP down to southeast, southwest Michigan.
Wonderful. That's a great idea. Well, let's get back to Expo.
Sure.
Certainly, first and foremost, an educational experience and event, but also an entertaining one as well. What are some of the things that you're going to feature this year, Megan?
I'm really excited. We're going to be able to offer a tillage demonstration, a sprayer application, and floater fertilizer demonstration. You're going to have an opportunity to drive trucks. I've got Ford, Dodge, and Chevy coming in to do truck riding drives. We'll have telehandlers, wheel loaders, skid loaders to test drive. So a lot of interactive things. Ned Stoller is going to be there with AgriAbility and going to have wheelchairs there for people to test that have been through an accident. We also have some great educational sessions. Dr. Dale Roseboom with MSU Extension and Animal Science will be talking about how you finish the animal mortality composting process. Dr. Karen Waite and Tom Guthrie with MSU Extension are going to talk about equine management, everywhere from health to nutrition to facilities.
And all these special events, we better say this, well, is on the website, which is
agexpo.msu.edu, and you can also check us out on Facebook and Twitter.
Over the years, Megan, too, there's been, and you mentioned some of those, Conservation Intelligence Center, there's been a stronger and stronger emphasis on sustainability and some of the things that people in agriculture do that are really good for the environment.
Absolutely. One of my favorite spaces is Lois Wolfson with the Institute of Water Research, and she offers an interactive display where farmers and producers can sit down and actually look at their farm and assess where are the wetland areas, where should they be putting in buffer strips, what kind of tillage things should they be doing around those areas. It's probably one of my favorite stops, and we stop there every year and learn a little bit more about our own farm.
What about the fun stuff for the whole family? I know a lot of people in agriculture come, but a lot of folks come with their families too, and I imagine there's some of that good MSU Dairy Store ice cream.
There is, absolutely. There is MSU Dairy ice cream. We have hatching chickens where the kids can come learn about the entire process. We have a pork display where they're going to be actually talking about pork facilities, how they're becoming more and more sustainable. There will be displays. One of the ones I'm most excited about is 4-H joined up with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and they're going to be doing a commodity simulation where kids will have an opportunity to learn how to price commodities and market commodities.
That's wonderful. So the kids who don't even know what a commodities market is are going to learn a little bit about it.
Absolutely.
Now, how many exhibitors are you expecting this year, and how many people are you hoping are going to come?
We've got over 250 exhibitors signed up, and we're hoping to see over 15,000 people.
15,000 people over the three-day period. Well, the event, again, is called Ag Expo. It's on the campus of Michigan State University, July 16th through July 18th. It is free. Parking is free as well, and parking is readily available. I've been talking with Megan Honke, who is the coordinator of Ag Expo and many other events at Michigan State University. Megan, always great to see you, and I'll see you out at Ag Expo.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for having us.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
Sing our love for alma mater.
So what that means is when you graduate from college, we'll help you find your first career. When you move to any city, anywhere, we'll help you connect and settle. If you're mid-career and want to reinvent yourself, we'll help you find a new passion. And if you need advice or a friend anywhere in the world, the MSU Alumni Association will connect you with the 500,000 Spartans out there that are always ready to take your call.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu.
And thy praises
Alumni.msu.edu.
The University Research Corridor, empowering Michigan.
This is an association of the three research universities in Michigan to really collaborate on a deeper level than we have in the past and highlight for ourselves and for the region and for the nation the strength in technology, innovation, new research, investment that we think is going to help change the Michigan economy.
That's University of Michigan President Mary Sue Coleman.
The mission of the URC is no less than to help transform the Michigan economy and to make this a vibrant place that young people will want to come and stay, that businesses will want to be in, because we are a place where a lot is happening and we have the brain power for the new economy. It's here. It's in Michigan. We just need to tap it.
Visit us online at urcmich.org.
So Michigan is vibrant. Michigan has all these things, and we want to signal that to the entire world.
Visit the University Research Corridor online at urcmich.org.
Sundays at 4 o'clock, it's MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. MSU Today is a lively look at MSU-related people, places, events, and attitudes put into focus through conversations by MSU President Simon, Spartans A.D. Hollis, sustainability-focused Dr. Kirk Heinze, and me. MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.
I'm Russ White for MSU Today with MSU alumna Jody Lamb. Jody, welcome back to campus.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so great to be here and to be back on campus. It really is. I wish I could stay a little while longer.
Well, Jody is the author of a book called Easter Ann Peters, Operation Cool, in which Jody sensitively handles the complicated dynamic that is the alcoholic mother. Easter Ann Peters, Operation Cool from Scribe in 2012 is about a 12-year-old, socially awkward, straight-A student who's plan, Operation Cool, is to reinvent herself. So, Jody, tell us more about that and what's the book about?
Easter Ann Peters, Operation Cool is a middle grade novel, so it's written for ages 8 to 13. Like you said, it's about a girl who's trying to reinvent herself, and her plan is derailed as she copes with her depressed and alcoholic mother. And it's really a story of coming of age and fitting in and coping with very common family struggles, which is an alcoholic family. And so I hope that readers are inspired by the Easter character's determination and hope. And I wrote it because I grew up in a large, lovable, wonderful family in which alcoholism is a problem. And so I know this story would have moved me as a tween. And I know there are millions of children across the U.S. and the world who will also be moved by it.
Jody Lamb is my guest on MSU Today, author of Easter Ann Peters, Operation Cool. And Jody, what would you say is maybe the biggest myth or misunderstanding you'd like to clear up about alcoholism in families?
Alcoholism today still remains a family secret. So people think that an alcoholic is the person on the street who doesn't want a job, and a lot of children hear that word associated with people who are refusing help. They don't often think about alcoholics being wonderful people who are very active in communities and seem to have everything together, because so much happens behind closed doors. And children who grow up in a home where alcoholism or any kind of addiction is a problem are much more likely to experience various types of abuse. And as you know, that definitely is a buried secret in a lot of families. And so I think today it's the 21st century. We have more opportunity than ever before to start the conversation. People who, are not affected by alcoholism should make their children aware. And if everyone starts talking about it, people who really need help will step up and get it, because they'll realize that they're not alone in their struggles.
What is the best way, Jody Lamb, for a young person or anyone hearing our conversation, if they need to reach out in some way on this in alcoholism? What's your suggestion?
Young people should turn to an adult that they trust in their lives, whether it's a teacher or another family member, and let them know what's going on in their homes. For anyone, they should look at Al-Anon family groups. That's a wonderful support group for family members of alcoholics and other addicts. And I started going to that group, just a few years ago when I found myself in this quarter-life crisis. And boy, I wish I had known about it and gone very earlier. I would have received a lot of strength from talking about the problem and getting to know others and learning how they coped with such problems.
And Jody, is Easter Ann Peters, Operation Cool a hopeful, positive book? And summarize what you hope readers take from it.
It is a very hopeful book, and I've been so pleased to hear feedback from readers who say, I have read some books on the subject, but you've done something different here. A lot of those books are very dark and difficult to read because you feel so badly for the characters experiencing that. And I wanted to make sure that the character Easter is very relatable. So even though she is going through problems at home with her mother, she's also a girl forging ahead with fitting in and going through your typical everyday struggles at school. school. She even has a bully. And so I think readers can really identify with her, with the character. And because there isn't so much emphasis on what's going on at home, readers can handle it. They know that that Easter, in the end, is going to find her way. And in the end, Easter and her family are on the road to recovery. And so it is a very hopeful ending.
And what do you hope they take from it, the main point, do you think?
Yeah, I hope that that readers are inspired by Easter's determination to find a solution and by her hope. For readers who don't have alcoholics in their lives, I hope that this story fosters an understanding about alcoholism as a disease and maybe some sensitivity to what their friends, classmates, neighbors, teammates might be going through at home.
Jody Lamb, what is the best way for people to get a copy of Easter Ann Peters' Operation Cool?
The book is available at on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and some bookstores. It's also available in the Kindle store as an ebook. And on my website, JodyLamb.com, you can also find additional resources for places to find help if you're a young person or anyone who's affected by alcoholics or other addicts.
And what's next for you, as I'm sure you're not done with this crusade? What's next?
I really wish I could clone myself because I feel such urgency in writing more and I enjoy it so much. So I'm currently working on a sequel to the Easter Ann Peters story, that's for a slightly older audience. But I also have some nonfiction books in the works that are designed to help children deal with very tough subjects, including living with an alcoholic. And I hope some way to provide those books at no cost to children. So that's my next big endeavor.
and tell people how you'd like them to stay in touch with you, social media or email. How can people stay up with what you're doing?
I would love to hear from my fellow Spartans and anyone in the community. I am on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, YouTube, basically any social media that's out there. You can find me there. And all of those links are on my website, JodyLamb.com.
That's Jody Lamb, and there's more at JodyLamb.com. And I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
Turn it up. Turn it up. A little bit higher. Radio. Turn it up. Burn it up. So you know. Radio.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
Visit us online at spartanpodcast.com.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at spartanpodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.